And now, Everything for the Boys, starring Ronald Coleman, is brought to you by transcription.
From Hollywood, California, and a base in North Africa, Autolite brings you Everything for the Boys, starring Mr. Ronald Coleman. The play, Lost Horizon. Everything for the Boys is presented by the Electric Autolite Company and its 22 great manufacturing plants. Builders of precision equipment for 35 years. World famous for Autolite spark plugs, batteries, wire, cable, and electrical systems for automotive, aviation, and marine use. Your host, Mr. Ronald Coleman.
Thank you and good evening. The combination of James Hilton's fantasy Lost Horizon and a pin-up girl may seem strange to you. And yet, the request of our soldiers in Algiers for Janet Blair and Shangri-La is really a very logical one. Janet, you seem disturbed.
Well, yes, I am, Ronnie. I can understand their wanting to hear you in Lost Horizon, but tell me, where do I come in before the microphone?
Well, Janet, even as your pin-up pictures are a very real link with home, so the Shangri-La of our play tonight is a symbol of the ideals for which free people are struggling. Whether one knows the story of Lost Horizon or not, the word Shangri-La has come to mean a place of lasting peace and contentment and love. And that surely is what our men are fighting for. Now, Janet, you and I are going to talk to two of these members of our armed forces later by special overseas radio between Hollywood and North Africa.
I can hardly wait, Ronnie.
But first, at their express command, we bring to them and to all of you tonight's play. Men and women of the United States Army stationed in Algiers, we are at your command.
Picture yourself 15 years ago driving over a country road in a rainstorm, wheels sinking into the mud almost up to the axles. Multiply that memory 1,000 times, and you'll have a slight conception of what our men and machines are facing on South Pacific Islands today. Solid sheets of rain turn jungles and hills into 1,000 square miles of mud and slime. Still, our tanks and jeeps and trucks must keep moving forward. Autolite engineers are exerting every ounce of energy to help make the job easier for our boys. Autolite batteries, spark plugs, and electrical systems are the electrical lifeline in thousands of these vehicles of victory, helping them cut through swamp-studded jungles, crawl up jagged mountainsides, roll onward in spite of the elements, in spite of the enemy. This is Autolite keeping its pledge, Everything for the Boys. And on the home front, this same Autolite electrical lifeline is doing double duty in cars and trucks. We say double duty because we're asking it to last twice as long. So take care of it. And when any of these vital parts needs replacing, be sure they're original Autolite parts. Any one of the thousands of Autolite service stations, your local car dealer and serviceman will be glad to do everything they can to help you care for your car for your country. The play, Mr. Ronald Coleman in Lost Horizon, is dramatized for radio by Arch Obler.
The scene is a hospital somewhere far in the Chinese interior, where the borders of China and Tibet meet in the great windswept plain of Amashar. A priest and a nun listen as a man tells them a story.
You have been very kind, and I am grateful. What I tell you is all I can give you for what you have done for me. What I tell you is strange. It is the truth. I was in the consular service in India. On this day that I tell you about, I was in a plane going from Baskul to Peshawar. There were 4 of us on board. A Mr. Henry Barnard, an American.
This flight is 10 minutes late already. Now, back home in America, we make schedules, and by gosh, we stick to them.
A Mr. Roberta Brinklow of the Eastern Mission.
Our mission had a most prosperous year last year. 50 new converts. But I know that, God willing, we will do better than that in the coming months.
And my assistant, Captain Charles Mallinson.
I say, Conway. Conway.
Yes, Marison?
I thought Fenner was piloting us.
Well, isn't he?
No, the chap just turned his head. He's Chinese or something. Let's find out who he is and where he thinks he's going.
We didn't find out. As we came close to him, he turned and pointed a gun at us and told us to sit down.
It's outrageous. Completely outrageous.
Kidnapping us. That's what the hoodlum's doing.
But where's he taking us? Where? Where?
Where? Yes, where? The plain higher and higher, and beneath us, as far as the eye could see, a world filled with endless ranges of tremendous mountains. Where was he taking us? No answer.
It's so terribly cold.
Here's my coat.
No, thank you, Mr. Conway.
How long is this going on? Where is he taking us? Don't any of you care?
Well, there doesn't seem to be much we can do about it. Eh, Mr. Conway?
No, I'm curious to know the meaning of it. Why should he be flying us here, of all places in the world? Look down there. The most desolate range of mountains this side of the moon. Why should he...
Down! We're going down!
The motor's cut out.
Pouring!
Steady, steady. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. And so we came to the Valley of the Blue Moon. We crawled out of the wreckage into the snow and saw before us in the thin blue air the wonder of the Lamasery of Shangri-La. What can I tell you of that first sight of Shangri-La? A tremendous icy lift of mountain, and clinging to its side with a delicate color of flower petals, a group of pavilions beautiful as in a childhood fairy tale. Icy desolation all around. All but the green oasis of the Valley of the Moon and the Lamasery of Shangri-La.
You will come this way, please. You will come this way, please.
A little Chinese there to lead us. And soon we were in the buildings of Shangri-La, and there was cleanness and warmth and beauty all about us.
This place is amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Mr. Conway, how do you explain all this?
Oh, perhaps Mr. Chang here could tell us.
It will give me greatest pleasure to tell you what I am able to tell you.
How many people are here?
Here, there are about 50. In the valley below, a few thousand.
Well, this is apparently some sort of religious order. In what do you believe?
If I were to put it in a very few words, my dear sir, I should say that our greatest belief is in moderation.
Well, all I'm interested in is how soon can we get out of here? Well?
The mountain? No, the great chasm. It is most difficult. No, impossible. Without guide.
Well, that's no answer. We've got to get back to civilization.
Mr. Chang, Mr. Mallinson is young, impatient. However, I do hope you can arrange our return journey as quickly as possible.
Return journey? You are wiser than your friends, Mr. Cunningham.
His eyes were on mine, and suddenly I understood. This was not a chance meeting. He had wanted us there. But why? Why had we been brought to this wonder of the Valley of the Blue Moon? The days began to pass quickly, and one day, she was there. As delicate and as wonderful as the garden in which I found her. It was night, and the smell of the night flowers was like a new wine, when suddenly there was music. The player was a woman. In the moonlight I saw her. White face, high cheekbones, black hair drawn tightly back and braided, mouth like a flower. Through the music I spoke to her.
I am Lu Jin.
You live here?
Yes.
You play beautifully.
You are kind.
My name is Conway.
Yes, I know. You are one of those he brought to us through the sky.
He?
He obeyed the High One of Shangri-La.
Oh, you mean the pilot?
He brought you through the air over great mountains with a bird to hold him. He died to bring you here.
And in a few moments, she went away. This Shangri-La was a place of wonders, and somehow I began to believe there were even greater wonders ahead.
My dear Mr. Conway, I congratulate you. He wishes to see you immediately.
He? Who do you mean?
You will come with me, please, sir, at once. He has sent for you. The High Lama has sent for you.
He took me up endless stairs and along dark, perfumed corridors. And suddenly I was in a room. warm, and filled with a strangeness I couldn't understand. And then in the darkness of that room, there was a soft light, and a voice spoke.
It is a great pleasure to see you here, Mr. Conway.
It's an honor to be received by you, sir.
I trust you have been comfortable at Shangri-La since your arrival.
Extremely so.
Please sit by me, Mr. Conway.
I sat by him. He was a very old man in Chinese dress, and his face was as calm as his voice.
Many years ago, a priest came to this place. His name was Perrault. The year was 1734, and he was 53 years of age. He was a scholar, and he loved this place and the inhabitants of this valley. He began to build this lamasery. His disciples came here to be with him, and soon they forgot the world, and the world forgot them. But the years passed by, and Perrault was very old, and he lay down to die in the peace of old age. He was 108. But suddenly, on the threshold of death, Perrault had a great vision, and he awoke, and an understanding of the way of life came to him. And he did not die. The years went by, and he did not die. The others came to the valley, and Perrault told them his secret, and they did not die. And Shangri-La grew, and it became a place of peace and contemplation and study. Here men left behind the meaninglessness of the world, the tyranny of things, and once they came here, they never returned. For if they went back to the outside world, they became as old as they really were, and died. Do you understand?
I will never return.
What else do you understand, Conway? What else?
That you came here in 1734, and yet you are still alive. Father Perrault. A man already old in 1734 and still alive.
For in that vision that appeared to old Perrault, when he lay dying in his room in the year 1789, he saw that the day would come when intolerance and lust and brutality might someday crush all of the loveliest things until there were no more left in the world. The small, the delicate, the beautiful, the defenseless, all would be lost. That, my son, is why I am here and why you are here.
You think that Shangri-La will escape?
Perhaps. Here we shall stay with our books and our music and our meditations. We have a heritage to cherish and to bequeath to the world. For when the evil has devoured itself, the Christian ethic may at last be fulfilled, and the meek shall inherit the earth.
He spoke those words, and suddenly I did what I have never done to any man before. I knelt before him. And there was a peace within me that I had never known. And the next morning...
You know, it's a funny thing how this place grows on you. Me, I begun to feel this way about it. Even if those guides get here, I'm going to pass them by. I kind of go for this place.
As a matter of fact, I think I shall stay here, too. You see, I've been thinking over the way things happened to bring us all here. There's a mysterious power working. I was sent here for a purpose. I don't quite know why. But I shall stay here.
The wonder of Shangri-La was in them, too. Only in my young friend Mallinson was there anger.
It's a madhouse, and there's only one sane person in it. Lodzen, that Chinese girl who plays the piano. Everyone's mad around here but she.
And she?
And she? She's young and wonderful.
Lodzen, wonderful, yes, but young?
You wish to talk to me?
Yes, I do.
Talk of what?
Of you. Who are you? Where did you come from?
I was betrothed to a prince of Turkestan. I was traveling to Kashgar to meet him when my carriers became lost in these mountains. All of them died, but I was rescued and brought here.
When did this happen?
The year was 1884. I was 18.
Then she lifted her face toward mine, and it was young, everlastingly young. And then I knew that Shangri-La was a place of wonder. From the blue iciness of the mountain to the green depths of the valley, to the sound of the music across the lotus pool, it was in my heart. Perfect, incomparable. A year, a decade, the end of time, it didn't matter. Here I was, and here I wanted to stay. But the next night there was a storm in Shangri-La.
Quick, Conway, he's waiting for you. Go in.
Yes.
Closer, my good friend, close. Here, sit by me. Is there something you wish to tell me?
Well, sir, it's Mallinson. Somehow he's begun to understand that whoever comes here can never leave. He's almost out of his mind.
I know. He's going to be your problem.
My problem?
Yes, my son, for I am going to die.
Die?
Yes. Over 2 centuries of living, it is enough for one mortal. I'm quite content. One thing remains. Can you imagine what that is? I place in your hands, my son, the heritage and destiny of Shangri-La.
And then he stopped speaking, but the words still echoed in my head. His eyes were on me, and his lips didn't move, but his thoughts came to me as if he was speaking. I have waited for you a long time, my son. You will live through the storm that is coming to the world. The airmen bearing loads of death to the great cities will not pass our way. And when they are gone, a new world will stir in the ruins, looking in hopefulness for its lost and legendary treasures. And they will all be here, my son, waiting behind the mountains in the valley of the blue moon. And then I looked at his face, and there was nothing left but a mask crumbling like old wood. And his eyes were closed. And suddenly I knew that the High Lama was dead. I left the room, and through the window I could see that the sky was clear, though the mountains still blazed in lightning. And I was master of Shangri-La. But suddenly, Lo Tsen was there.
The guides, they have come. They will lead us out of the Valley of the Moon.
Us?
Yes, you and Mallinson and I. Hurry, Conway.
But that's impossible.
You do not stand there talking.
But if you leave this valley, you'll fade away like an echo.
No, it is not true. It is not.
But the Lama said...
How do I know that what the Lama says is true? I am young, and Mallinson is young.
Mallinson?
Yes, Mallinson. I want him, and I will go with him.
Oh, Lord Sen, listen to me. No. I know the truth. If you leave here, you will die.
No, I will go with him. I will. And you must help me.
No, I can't.
You love me, too. I know it. It is in your face, in your voice, when you speak to me. Without your help, we cannot get over the mountain pass. If you care for me, Conway, help me. Help me now.
I'll help you, Lo Tsen. I'll help you. What more can I tell you? At dawn, we three left Shangri-La, climbed high into the snow, and when I looked back, the Valley of the Blue Moon was like a cloud floating after me through the haze. Before us were the ice and snow, and 1,100 miles beyond was the China border. We climbed up and up toward the crevice in the mountain that was the only way outside, and Mallinson was on one side of Lo Tsen, and I was on the other. And at first her face was quick with smiles. Then a storm came up, the quick, terrible storm of snow and sleet of the Himalayas. We walked and we fell and we crawled, but always ahead was more snow, and behind was more snow, and the cold crept closer and closer to us. And one day Mallinson fell, and he didn't rise. And Lo Tsen and I were left alone. And high above the wind, I heard her cry as she knelt over his body. And when she lifted her face...
Dead. He is dead. And I... What has happened? happened this way. My face. Oh, I am getting old. Conway, help me. Take me back to Samarella. Oh,
It was true. Her face, old, wrinkled and leathery and horrible. The oldest face I'd ever seen. And I too cried out, and I fell in the snow, and I knew nothing more until I woke up here among you. And you told me that I was brought here by an old Chinese woman, the oldest woman you had ever seen, who brought me here and then lay down and died. You have made me well again, and I am very grateful. In your eyes, I see a question, where am I going? I'm going to find my way back to Shangri-La. It is my heritage to keep alive the treasures of heart and mind, and they are all hidden behind the mountains of the Blue Moon. Soon, the world will need what is there. Soon, the meek shall inherit the earth.
Just heard Mr. Ronald Coleman in James Hilton's Lost Horizon as dramatized for radio by Arch Oboler. The role of the High Lama was played by Norman Field and that of Lo Tsen by Mercedes McCambridge. The special musical score was arranged and conducted by Mr. Gordon Jenkins. While our Autolite transatlantic hookup is being set up for Mr. Coleman and his guest, Miss Janet Blair, to speak with the two American soldiers in Algiers who requested tonight's play, Mr. Coleman has a word for you who fight on the home front.
Ladies and gentlemen, there is a place in Toledo, Ohio, with a huge bronze plaque just inside the door. On it appear 3,485 names, some of them in gold. Miss Janet Blair is going to tell you what they are.
They are the names of 3,485 Autolite men and women who have joined the armed forces. And as you go through each of the Autolite's great manufacturing plants, you will find other signs, banners, flying high above the huge furnaces and giant presses. Each of these banners bears a message. We're buying war bonds, 100%. Yes, at Autolite, it is truly everything for the boys. Just ask that pretty dark-haired girl who runs the giant hydraulic press as casually as if she was sitting at home at her sewing machine. She'll tell you about Frank. He's somewhere in New Guinea now, and she hasn't had a letter from him for more than a month, but she knows she'll hear from him soon. No one has to beg her to buy war bonds. She knows who she's buying them for, even as her fellow workers know. One of them buys for a boy named Henry on the road to Rome. For another, it's Joe on a destroyer patrolling the North Atlantic. For another, it's Tom ferrying P-38s to a fighting front.
For others, it isn't a name but an idea, love of country and love of humanity. For whatever the reason, all of them are joining with you and me in the proud privilege of saying we are backing the attack. We are buying war bonds.
The circuit between Hollywood and North Africa is open, Mr. Coleman.
Thank you, Engineer. Janet, here, take this headphone.
Yes, Ronnie.
Sergeant Gannon and Private Maloney are waiting to talk to us over in Algiers. So speak up, Janet. From Hollywood to North Africa, the party line is yours.
Hello, Sergeant Gannon. Hello, Private Maloney. Are you really there?
Hello, Miss Blair. I mean, hello, Janet. You can call me Dave.
Did you hear that, Ronnie? He wants me to call him Dave.
Well, you can't beat an infantryman.
Sure, why, Janet Blair and I have known each other a long time.
Now, wait a minute, Sergeant. They told me you're from Alva, Oklahoma, and I've never been in Oklahoma in my life.
Yeah, but you're the first face I see in the morning.
What?
There you are, hanging on the wall.
Janet, he means you're a North African pinup.
That's right, Mr. Coleman. I've looked at Miss Blair from every angle, and I like all of them.
How about Private Maloney? Can we talk to Private Maloney for a few moments?
You certainly can. I've been waiting for a long time to talk to you, Mr. Coleman.
Ronnie, you didn't tell me. Private Maloney is a woman.
I'm more than a woman. I'm a whack.
Well, the fact is, Private Maloney is more than a whack. She's a hero. She was awarded the Soldier's Medal for saving a soldier from being burnt to death after a gasoline explosion. Isn't that right, Private Maloney?
She can't talk, Mr. Coleman. You ought to see her. She's blushing all the way down here in Algiers.
Well, while she's recovering, Sergeant, how would you like to have some news from your folks at Alva?
I would sure like that, Mr. Coleman.
Well, here it is, Dave, from Alva, Oklahoma, to you by way of Janet Blair.
Well, Dave, all your folks, including your brothers in the service, are getting along just fine. And they all think that after the action you saw in Sicily and Italy, working in an army post office must be pretty tame. But they say, take it easy until you're all well again.
Or tell them I'm feeling fine. What are they worrying about me for? I worry about them.
Well, you worry about the folks back in Oklahoma? Why?
Well, what about this gas rationing?
Gas rationing? Nothing to it, Sergeant. Listen.
That's what they're doing in Oklahoma, Sergeant. Picking them up and laying them down.
All right, but how about this shoe rationing?
Shoe rationing? Nothing to it, Sergeant. Listen.
That's what they're doing down in Oklahoma, Sergeant. Riding the horses.
Wait till I get back. I'll bring them a jeep.
Why not a camel?
Okay, two humps or one.
Private Maloney, have you recovered yet? If you have, here's your chance to talk to the folks in Rochester, New York.
Hello, Mom and Dad. Hello, Jimmy and Elfie. Hi there, Pat. How's Tammy and the twins?
We've got the answer to that, Private Maloney. We made a personal call to your folks, and they said to tell you that the twins send a special pair of very wet kisses to their whack Aunt Helen.
They're wonderful kisses.
And here's some more news for you, Helen. Your family has moved into a new house.
A new house? Where?
Well, it's on Main Street East, and the best room in the house is empty, and they're saving it for you.
A room to myself? Well, that's wonderful.
Well, your mother says she's leaving it for you to decorate any way you want.
Well, Mother, I know you're listening. So, first, thanks for all my hat.
Your mother is listening, Helen.
And tell all my friends in Rochester that I'm healthy and happy and terribly glad that I'm out here doing something in this war. And I know that they're doing all they can by working in war industries and buying war bonds.
Say, Private Maloney, is there anything I can do for you? I mean, woman to woman.
I'm glad you asked me that, Miss Blair. Could you do something for me?
Well, this is everything for the boys and girls.
Would you make an appointment for me at the Rochester Beauty Shop? I want a shampoo, permanent wave, and such.
Well, what date should I make the appointment for, Helen?
And tell my brother Jim to order me 6 pairs of nylon stockings, or make a 12 tier one.
Oh, Ronnie, nylon hose and beauty parlor appointments? My gosh, what will I do?
Listen, Private Maloney, I know this is no man's land, but beauty parlor appointments and those dozen pair of nylon stockings, well, you know, they're very difficult to get.
Well, don't worry about that, Mr. Coleman. I don't need them now. I was just giving you my post-war plans.
Time's up, Mr. Coleman.
All right. Private Maloney and Sergeant Gannon, the man is here who says we're out of time. So goodbye to you down there in North Africa from all of us here in Hollywood.
Goodbye, Mr. Coleman.
Goodbye, Janet. Send me your picture, will you? I mean a great big personal one.
I will, Dave, and goodbye.
Good luck. Ladies and gentlemen, our circuit to Algiers is broken. We hope that this half hour has helped to make good our creed of everything for the boys. Yes, everything. Our thoughts, our prayers, our work, and the investment of our money in the bonds that buy the weapons of victory.
Again next week, Autolite invites you to be present for this new global half hour, Everything for the Boys, uniting the home front with the battle fronts overseas. Your host, Ronald Coleman, will have as his guest Miss Greer Garson in Arch Oboler's radio dramatization, Berkeley Square, all at the express command of a group of fighting Yanks who will listen in and then speak directly from their base in the South Pacific.
Our thanks to Janet Blair for being with us tonight. Until next week, when at the command of our boys at advanced base in the South Pacific, we bring you Greer Garson in Berkeley Square. This is Ronald Coleman saying good night to you and the boys, and God be with you.
Janet Blair is soon to be seen in Columbia's new picture, Curly. The appearance of service personnel does not constitute endorsement by the War Department of the product advertised. This program has come to you from Hollywood and Algiers. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Everything for the boys, starring...